Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are taking on a pretty massive mission, honestly.
It's a big one.
It is. We're looking at this fascinating article from the OOTW Journal, and it's about something called gamma brain waves.
Yeah.
And we're going to explore what might just be like the actual biological rhythm of consciousness itself.
Which is, you know, no small topic.
Right, right. No big deal. Just consciousness. We have a lot of source material to synthesize today, covering everything from the visual cortex of cats to the, you know, cutting edge neuroscience of psychedelics.
Yeah.
But to start, I want you to just imagine something really simple. Just picture a bright red ball rolling across a wooden floor.
Okay. I have it. It is a very clear image.
Yeah. And it seems like the most basic, you know, seamless experience in the world. You see the red, you see the round shape, you see the continuous motion as it rolls. But if we peek under the hood at what your brain is actually doing in that exact fraction of a second, the reality of that red ball essentially, well, it shatters into pieces.
It really does, yeah.
Because according to the research, your brain processes the color red in one specific patch of neurons, right? But the round shape is processed in a totally different area. And the rolling motion, that's handled by a third network entirely. And the kicker here is that those neuronal patches, they never physically touch each other.
Right, which introduces one of the most profound and honestly oldest mysteries in neuroscience.
Yeah.
Because despite all that scattered, you know, distributed processing, you do not experience a disembodied redness floating somewhere near a, you know, a shapeless sense of motion.
Right. You just see the ball.
Exactly. You experience one unified object in real time.
Yeah. There is no inner screen in our heads. Like there's no tiny observer sitting in the central theater watching a finished movie of a red ball. The analogy that always comes to mind for me is it's like an orchestra playing a perfect symphony, but none of the musicians can see or hear each other. And there is no conductor standing in the front waving a baton. Wait, so if they aren't sending this data to a central folder somewhere,
yeah,
how does the brain know that the red and the roundness belong to the same ball? It sounds like a logistical nightmare.
Oh, it is a logistical nightmare. And neuroscientists actually call it the binding problem.
The binding problem.
Right. If you break reality apart to process it, what is the mechanism that puts it all back together? And the answer we are exploring today is highly elegant. It suggests the brain does not glue reality together using physical space.
Okay.
It glues it together using time. Specifically, it uses a rhythmic oscillation called gamma.
Time. Okay, that brings us to a historical turning point in the source material. Because to understand how time acts as this glue, we have to go all the way back to 1989, right?
Yeah, 1989.
Two researchers, Charles Gray and Wolfsinger, are working in Frankfurt, and they're studying the visual cortex of cats.
Right. So Gray and Singer were recording the electrical activity of individual neurons in these cats while showing them very specific visual stimuli. They wanted to see how the cells responded to lines and shapes. And what's fascinating here is they discovered a pattern that fundamentally shifted our understanding of perception. When neurons in completely different parts of the visual cortex responded to the exact same object.
Which was what? Like a ball?
No, in this case, they were using a single solid bar sweeping across a screen.
Oh, okay. Got it.
So when the neurons responded to that one object, their firing suddenly synchronized. They started oscillating together at roughly 40 beats a second.
40 hertz. That's the gamma range, right?
Yes, exactly. But the crucial detail is what happened when the visual field changed. When those same neurons were responding to completely different, you know, separate objects on the screen, they still fired.
Because they're still seeing something.
Right. They were still processing visual data, but they fell out of rhythm. They did not synchronize.
Oh, wow. So synchrony is the brain's internal tag.
Yes.
It's the brain's way of saying, you know, these distinct features belong to the same physical object. If the neuron processing the redness and the neuron processing the roundness fire at the exact same millisecond, 40 times a second, the brain interprets that as a single entity.
That is the core of the binding by synchrony hypothesis. It shifted the entire field of neuroscience away from looking for a specific place where everything unites and toward looking at timing mechanisms.
Wow. But Crick's idea, or rather the evolution of this whole idea, it didn't stop at just binding the features of a rolling ball, did it? Because Francis Crick, the same scientist who, you know, co-discovered the structure of DNA.
The very same.
He eventually pivoted to studying consciousness, right?
It did.
And in 1990, he and Christoph Koch took this Frankfurt cat data and proposed something just massive. They hypothesized that this 40 hertz gamma synchrony wasn't just about perceiving objects. They argued it was the actual neural signature of conscious awareness itself.
Which was an incredibly bold claim for 1990.
I mean, yeah.
Because at the time, consciousness was largely seen as a subjective topic for philosophers, you know, not hard biology. But Crick and Koch argued that consciousness is a physical, measurable event.
Right.
They proposed that this gamma rhythm is the mechanism that selects the relevant information scattered across the cortex and binds it into the unified experience of a single moment.
But I mean, that is just a theory. If 40 hertz is the actual signature of consciousness, you would need to find a moment where a person transitions from unconscious processing to conscious awareness and catch the brain changing its rhythm in real time.
Mm-hmm.
How do you even test something that massive in a lab without just relying purely on, like, a person saying, I saw it?
Well, the source points to a brilliant 2007 experiment by Lucia Maloney and her colleagues that tackled this exact problem.
Okay.
They used a technique called visual masking. So they hooked human subjects up to an EEG to measure their brainwaves, and they flashed words on a screen right at the absolute threshold of visibility.
Okay, meaning the words appear so fast that sometimes they register in your awareness, and sometimes your brain completely misses them, even though your eyes physically capture the exact same amount of light, right?
Precisely. The biological input is identical, but the conscious experience differs trial by trial. And when the researchers analyzed the EEG data, the initial phase looked identical for both scenarios.
Interesting.
Yeah. When a word was flashed, whether the person consciously saw it or not, the visual areas of the brain showed an early, localized gamma response. The visual cortex was doing its job, you know, processing the raw sensory data of the letters.
But that local processing wasn't enough to trigger awareness. Like, the brain was working, but the lights weren't fully on.
Exactly. The critical divergence happened a fraction of a second later. For the words that were consciously perceived, the ones the subjects could actually report seeing, that local gamma activity suddenly triggered a transient long-range synchronization. Yeah. Widespread, distant regions of the brain, from the visual cortex at the back all the way to the executive centers at the front, they all linked up. They started oscillating in the gamma band together.
But for the unseen words.
For the unseen words, that global phase locking never occurred. The signal remained local and quickly faded.
Gosh. So it's the difference between a local circuit functioning in isolation and a full-blown brainwide broadcast. When the words were unseen, the local visual cortex is still firing. But consciousness, that explicit moment of, I see it, that only emerges when the entire network locks into the same frequency and broadcasts the data simultaneously across the brain.
That's it, exactly. The Maloney study demonstrated that the boundary between unconscious processing and conscious experience isn't necessarily about the raw amount of neural activity. It is about large-scale coordination, distant regions of the brain agreeing to briefly beat together in phase.
Okay, well, this raises a major mechanical question for me.
Sure.
If this global 40 hertz synchrony is the broadcast of our reality, who is keeping the time? What physical machinery inside our neural tissue is actually beating this 40 hertz drum with that level of precision?
And finding the pacemaker was the missing piece of the puzzle for a very long time. Because binding by synchrony was an elegant concept, but it was correlational.
Right. They just saw it happening at the same time.
Right. Researchers could see gamma happening alongside perception, but they needed to find the actual biological switch generating the rhythm to understand the causality.
And the main processing cells in the brain, the ones doing all the heavy lifting of transmitting the actual data, they aren't the ones setting the pace, are they?
No, they are not. The brain's main workhorses are excitatory pyramidal neurons. You can think of them as the gas pedal. They send signals forward to stimulate other cells.
Okay.
But they do not dictate the rhythm. The pacemaker for gamma is a very specific class of inhibitory cell called a parvalbumin expressing interneuron. We just refer to them as PV cells.
PV cells. Okay, so we have the main cells acting as the gas pedal and these PV cells acting as the brakes. But how does applying the brakes create a steady 40 hertz wave?
It works through a really fascinating biological mechanism known as the rebound effect.
Rebound effect.
Yeah. So PV cells are extremely fast spiking, and their anatomical structure allows them to blanket hundreds of nearby pyramidal neurons with their connections. When a PV cell fires, it releases inhibitory neurotransmitters that essentially silence the surrounding excitatory network. It forces all those pyramidal cells to pause.
Oh, like a dam temporarily holding back a river.
Exactly like that. The PB cell applies this blanket inhibition, but the inhibition wears off very quickly. And when that brief window of silence lifts, all the pyramidal neurons that were held back suddenly fire at the exact same time.
Oh, wow. So they release a synchronized burst of activity.
Yes. Then the PV cell immediately fires again, silencing them once more. This cycle of silence, synchronized burst silence, happens every 25 milliseconds. That rhythmic inhibition is what carves the brain's chaotic baseline static into organized 40 hertz gamma cycles.
That is just, I mean, the rhythm is literally created by structured silence.
Yes.
That is incredible. And the source highlights that neuroscientists didn't just infer this, right? They proved it in 2009 using optogenetics.
Yeah, optogenetics completely revolutionized this field.
Can you explain that briefly? Because I know it's a bit sci-fi.
It really is. It is a technique where researchers use harmless viruses to insert light-sensitive proteins, which were originally found in algae, into very specific types of neurons in living animals.
So they put algae proteins into the brain.
Basically, yeah. And once those proteins are expressed, researchers can shine a laser into the brain tissue and force those specific neurons to fire on command. It acts like a biological light switch.
Man, that's wild. So in 2009, teams led by Jessica Carden and Vika Sohal used this technique. And when they pulsed the laser to drive the main pyramidal cells, they just got general messy excitation.
Right.
But when they specifically targeted the light to drive the inhibitory PV cells at 40 hertz, they generated massive organized gamma waves on demand. Like they could turn the brainwave on and off with a light switch.
Exactly. They proved causality. The PV cell is the pacemaker. And this leads us to a highly influential theory by Pascal Fries called communication through coherence.
Communication through coherence. Okay.
Which explains why this 25 millisecond window is so biologically optimal.
Okay, let's break that down. Why 25 milliseconds? Why not 10 or 50?
It actually comes down to the physical travel time of signals across the cortex. The idea is that this 25 millisecond cycle acts as a just-in-time routing mechanism. It is long enough for an electrical signal to travel from one distant part of the brain to another, but short enough that our perception of the world feels perfectly fluid.
Okay, I'm picturing the PV cell as like a very strict bouncer at a busy club.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, opening and closing the doors exactly every 25 milliseconds. If two sensory inputs arrive at the door at the exact same time, they get in together, they synchronize, and they bind into one unified experience. But if one signal is even a fraction of a millisecond late, the door closes, and it's locked out of that specific perceptual moment.
The bouncer analogy works beautifully because it highlights how timing dictates communication. If two distant brain regions are oscillating in phase with each other, meaning their respective bouncers are opening the doors at the exact same time, they can exchange messages efficiently.
Right.
One region sends a signal exactly when the other region's pyramidal cells are free from inhibition and ready to receive it. But if they are out of phase, the message hits a closed door. The receiving cells are silenced when the signal arrives. By simply shifting the phase of these gamma rhythms, the brain can dynamically open and close communication channels moment to moment.
Understanding the mechanics behind that is just staggering. But, I mean, it also leads to a much darker question.
It does.
Because if our entire cohesive reality depends on this incredibly precise biological bouncer, what happens if the PV cells get sick? If they construct our unified reality, what happens when the pacemaker breaks?
And this takes the research from theoretical neuroscience directly into clinical pathology. Parvalbumin interneurons, the PV cells, are among the cells most consistently disrupted in schizophrenia.
Wow, really?
Yes. Postmortem studies and genetic analyses consistently show deficits in how these specific cells function in patients with the disorder.
Which bridges a huge gap in understanding the disease, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Abnormalities in gamma brainwaves, specifically a reduction in the power and synchronization of gamma, are a highly replicated finding in schizophrenia. Think about the cognitive and perceptual symptoms, the fragmentation of thought, the difficulty distinguishing internal dialogue from external voices, the blurring of reality. If the PV pacemakers responsible for binding features and routing information lose their rhythm, the seamless integration of experience begins to fray. The brain can no longer properly tag which signals belong together.
Oh, man. It provides a tangible biological mechanism for the fragmentation of perception. And the source material also details how certain chemical compounds manipulate this exact machinery, right? Which reveals even more about how fragile this rhythm is.
Right. Let's look at ketamine, which is widely studied both as a dissociative anesthetic and as a rapid-acting antidepressant.
All right.
Ketamine works primarily by blocking a specific receptor in the brain called the NMDA receptor. Now, the fast-spiking PV cells we just discussed rely heavily on excitatory drive through these NMDA receptors to maintain their strict, fast-paced timing.
So if ketamine blocks the NMDA receptor, it is effectively cutting the power supply to the bouncer.
Exactly. When ketamine blocks those receptors, the PV cells can't maintain their high-frequency firing. They stop applying that rhythmic blanket of inhibition to the surrounding cortex. The brakes are removed. And paradoxically, this disinhibition causes a massive surge in high-frequency activity. The pyramidal cells start firing wildly. You see a huge increase in gamma power on an EEG, but it is an unnatural, chaotic gamma.
So the brain is producing the wave, but it's completely disorganized, like it's coupling the wrong things together because the pacemaker has lost control.
Yes. This chaotic, disorganized surge is thought to be one of the primary reasons ketamine induces dissociative psychosis-like states at high doses, and it is also being investigated as the trigger for its rapid antidepressant effects, essentially forcing the network to reboot.
Wow. Now compare that to classic psychedelics, specifically psilocybin. The article contrasts them, and the reaction is totally different.
Right. It's entirely different. A pivotal 2013 study by Suresh Muthukumar Swami and Robin Carhart-Harris looked at the brain under psilocybin using magnetoencephalography.
They did three times fast.
Right. But they did not find a chaotic surge in gamma. They found what they termed a broadband desynchronization.
Meaning the tightly organized rhythms of the resting brain didn't get faster or louder. They essentially dissolved.
Exactly. There was a significant drop in oscillatory power across multiple frequency bands, including gamma. Classic psychedelics interact primarily with serotonin receptors, specifically the 5-HT2A receptor, which is heavily expressed on pyramidal cells. Activating these receptors seems to loosen the brain's rhythmic scaffolding. The strict phase relationships collapse.
See, it's completely counterintuitive to how we normally think about brain activity. It's because you assume an expanded state of awareness means the brain is just buzzing at top speed, highly synchronized across all channels.
Yeah.
But it's actually a loosening of that order.
It aligns with the entropic brain hypothesis. The everyday unity of our normal experience, the rigid ego structures, and the predictable flow of thought are heavily reliant on highly organized synchrony. When psilocybin induces broadband desynchronization, those boundaries soften. The brain operates in a more entropic, less constrained state. Normal, everyday consciousness requires gamma in the right relationships, binding the right things at the right time.
Now, as incredible as the 40 Hertz hypothesis is, we have to look at the science critically, right? We can't present this as the definitive, closed case answer to the universe. What do the skeptics point out regarding this research?
Maintaining skepticism is vital in neuroscience. While the binding by synchrony hypothesis is highly influential, it faces legitimate critique. The most prominent is the classic correlation versus causation problem. Just because gamma synchrony reliably accompanies conscious perception does not strictly prove it is the causal agent of consciousness.
So it could just be a byproduct.
Exactly. It might sometimes be a consequence of complex processing, you know, the exhaust fumes of the engine, rather than the engine itself.
I like that. Additionally, there was a major methodological controversy a while back. Researchers discovered that some of the high-frequency gamma signals being recorded by scalp EEGs were actually contaminated by tiny eye muscle artifacts.
Wait, what?
Yeah, microsaccades or tiny twitches of the eye muscles produce electrical signals in the exact same 40 hertz frequency range.
Are you kidding me? So some early studies thought they were mapping the frequency of conscious thought, and they were actually recording an eye twitch.
In some early studies, yeah. It forced the entire field to significantly tighten its methods. Researchers had to develop advanced algorithms to filter out muscular artifacts and rely more on intracranial recordings, where electrodes are placed directly on the brain to verify the findings.
Well, that is science correcting itself.
Right.
But even with those tighter methods, the core finding remains robust, doesn't it?
It does.
Long-range gamma synchrony is deeply implicated in how we form a cohesive reality. It just might not be the singular answer. It's one crucial instrument in the band. Finding is intensely complex. It almost certainly relies on multiple intersecting mechanisms. But the 40 hertz rhythm generated by PV cells remains one of the most compelling biological candidates we have for understanding how distributed neural activity becomes a unified mind.
That is amazing. Let's bring it all back to the beginning. We started with the scattered, isolated sensory features of a rolling red ball. And we've explored how the brain stitches those features together using a 40 hertz rhythm, binding by synchrony.
Right.
We looked at the biological machinery, the fast spiking PV cells, creating a 25 millisecond window of communication. And we examined how pathologies like schizophrenia or compounds like ketamine and psilocybin disrupt that delicate pacemaker, fundamentally altering our experience of reality.
It really gives you a profound appreciation for mundane moments. Every time you successfully reach out and catch a ball, millions of distant, isolated neurons across your cortex have dynamically agreed to phase lock and beat together for just a few fleeting milliseconds.
Yeah.
When that rhythmic agreement holds, your world is seamless.
It is the biological rhythm of the present moment. But, you know, before we sign off, I want to leave you, our listener, with a final thought to mull over. Building on that 25 millisecond window, we've established that our cohesive reality relies on this rhythmic pulsing, the bouncer opening and closing the door 40 times a second. But if our conscious experience is fundamentally constructed by these discrete cycles of synchrony, that means our continuous fluid experience of life isn't actually continuous at all. It is essentially refreshing, frame by frame, 40 times every second.
A truly staggering implication.
It really makes you wonder, you know, what is happening to us in the tiny microscopic gaps of time between those gamma beats? When the biological bouncer closes the door for a fraction of a millisecond, are we constantly blinking in and out of existence without ever even noticing? Keep questioning your reality, everyone. We will catch you on the next deep dive.
Until next time, keep wondering.